Chapter 4, Dreams. Simon didn't go to school the next day, feigning a stomach ache. It had all happened so quickly. He knew Aria was mad at him. That much was clear. He had done something wrong, but what? What was she afraid of? He had stayed up all night thinking, getting nowhere, but not wanting to add another bad dream to his list of anxieties. By Monday afternoon, he was hollow-eyed and exhausted. Simon found his mother laying on their porch, lazily staring up the street towards the wall to the west. He collapsed next to her and dropped his head into his paws. Laza yawned. "Is your stomach feeling any better?" she asked, and began unconsciously smoothing his mane with her claws. "It's all right," he said. He dimly noted for the first time that their neighbors' doors and porches all faced west, even when it didn't make any sense to build them that way. One hut's door opened right into a garbage heap. Simon rolled his eyes. "Stupid lions and their stupid traditions," he thought. "That's good," Laza said. Simon tilted his head around to look up at her. "What's good?" he asked. "Your stomach's feeling better. That's good." She smiled and nudged him playfully. "What are you off dreaming about, anyways?" Simon sighed, but didn't respond. "What's the matter, little mouse?" Laza asked, leaning down to her son. She began smoothing the fur on his face, and one of her claws tripped over the scar that ran down from the bridge of his nose just to the left of his mouth. Simon jerked. "Hey!" he shouted, batting her claw away. Laza reared back. Her eyes widened. Had Simon just hit her? Her giant son quickly tucked his paws back underneath his head. "Sorry," he whispered. Laza saw tears in his eyes and noticed for the first time just how tired he looked. She settled back into place, being careful not to touch him. "Did you sleep last night?" she asked. "No," Simon muttered. "That's not good for you, Simon," he shrugged. Laza exhaled heavily and thought. After a while, she asked, "Did I ever tell you about the time before you were born?" Simon's jaw was clamped shut from the weight of his head on his paws. "Yes," he mumbled through his teeth. "Oh, really?" Laza asked. Her eyes brightened, and she tried to look playful. Simon groaned. "Pappy left on a trip and didn't come back," he said, still speaking without actually opening his mouth. "You were sad, and then I was born, and then you were happy again." "Very happy," Laza said, smiling. "But I stopped being sad before you were born." She looked down at Simon. He didn't respond. She turned back to the wall and let the memories wash over her. "My father wasn't around very much growing up," she said. "He would go off for weeks at a time and come home with odd-looking flowers and strange meats, most of which I haven't seen since. I loved getting those flowers and hearing his tales of the distant savannah, but I hated when he would leave. I think I knew that one day he wouldn't come back." Simon looked up at his mother. He had never heard her talk about his pappy like that. His head was instantly flooded with visions of what those flowers might have looked like and how those meats might have tasted. Laza continued. "When he did leave for the last time, I knew it. I was heartbroken. I cried every night." She smiled, but still looked sad. "And then I had a very interesting dream." Simon shivered. He couldn't help it. The way she said it reminded him of his own dreams, but he would never have called them interesting. The sun was sinking towards the wall, and a thin vision of four stone-gray animals flickered through his mind. He felt ill. His mother's voice wavered on, at the edge of his hearing like a dim star. He tried to focus on it, and not the nightmare visions he had stayed up all night trying to avoid. "I dreamt that a mighty lion warrior came to me and gave me a knife. He was very tall, and reminded me of your grandfather. He told me the gift was for my son. When I woke up, I knew that I was pregnant. It was the happiest day of my life." Simon sat up, and Laza rested her paw on his. "The next night, another warrior came to me in my dreams, but he wasn't a lion. He was a powerful gazelle, and the night after that, the warrior was a wolf. The dreams continued every night until you were born, Simon, and each time the animal was smaller. The last one was a mouse, who, although he was tiny and meek, still had the soul of a warrior." Simon was entranced by his mother's story. He felt strangely honored and proud, but it still didn't make any sense to him. "That's where you got my nickname?" he asked. "It is," Laza said, leaning in towards him, bumping her head lightly against his. "My little mouse." Did the warriors have scars on their faces? Laza paused, her head still pressed to his. A nervous sensation crept into her head, right behind her eyes. She hadn't felt anything like that in a long time. She leaned back and looked up at her son and his damaged face.
No,
she said softly, steeling herself and sitting up straighter.
Simon,
look at my eyes. He did as she asked, looking into his mother's bright brown eyes.
No, she said, a little sternly. Don't look in them, look at them.
Simon frowned for a second, but then he understood. He shifted his focus, and instead of seeing the brown of his mother's irises, he saw himself reflected in them. He looked away. It made him very nervous to see himself. He had heard about the mirrors that some lions kept, made from highly polished black stone, but he had never seen one and had no interest in them. What he saw in his mother's eyes was an injured lion, and that wasn't how he saw himself. Laza stroked his cheek. Her paws tingled on his scars, but he didn't draw back.
I'm sorry, she said. I can't explain these. But I know something, Simon. I knew it after that first dream.
Simon closed his eyes.
What?
He asked.
I knew that one day I would have a son, and that he would be fearless and strong. I knew that he would be proud and noble. I knew he would be a warrior.
I don't feel like a warrior, he said, and pulled away.
But you look like one, little mouse, she cheered, and tried to tickle her son the way she would when he was small.
Simon frowned and pushed his mother's arms away gently. He was no longer small.
Thanks, Mom,
he said, and padded softly back into the house.
Dinner in an hour,
she called after him, trying to keep her voice steady. The nervous feeling behind her eyes had blossomed into a full-blown headache. She clenched her jaw and silently started to cry. She knew that no matter what she dreamt that night, the future was already set. Her son was going to leave her. Simon returned to school early the next day. He had everything figured out, and he wanted to speak with Aria as soon as possible, before classes began. It was so simple, the answer to their problem, and while it had taken him all night to think of it, he was sure that Aria would understand. He was desperately tired when he arrived at the schoolyard, but it was worth it. Simon stepped through a low gate into the wide, dry yard and was surprised to find it already filled with lions preparing for the day. Small prides of teenagers were already in motion, forming and dissolving in an endless rotation of gossip, flirting, and minor scuffles, while the younger cubs were swarming in all directions, stirring up clouds of dust and taking any excuse to roar at the top of their lungs. Simon was used to the chaos and expected to glide right through, but that day, things were different. Normally, the other lions ignored Simon and made space for him wherever he walked, but that day he found himself strangely cramped and cornered. As he tried to cut through towards the center of the yard, he was unable to walk more than a few feet in any direction without bumping into someone. What was worse, he quickly noticed that the tumult of the schoolyard was dying down to a whisper wherever he ventured, and while most of the lions seemed to be ignoring him as usual, he caught a few of them staring from the corners of their eyes. It made him extremely uneasy, and Aria was nowhere to be found. He came to a dense pride of lions who seemed intent on blocking his way. While they acted completely focused on their own conversation, every time Simon tried to move around them, their group shifted to obstruct his path. Simon was impatient and found himself getting frustrated. Finally, being the larger lion, he parted the pride down its center with his long arms.
"Excuse me,"
Simon said loudly, as he pushed two of the lions aside, trying to be gentle. In a flash, the crowds around Simon disappeared, flowing backwards like a well-organized swarm of bees. Simon blinked and found himself at the center of a large, tight circle. He shook his head. Was he dreaming? The schoolyard din died down to a whisper.
"You don't touch me, Enid Saad,"
said one of the lions from the pride, as he slowly turned around and stepped out of the crowd. It was Melik, Arya's brother. Simon stood shocked for a moment, his eyes darting around the circle. Where was Aria? What was going on? Ignoring Melik, he stood up to his full height and looked out over the circle of toothy, hungry-looking lions. He knew she was out there somewhere, but everything seemed a blur.
"Enid Saad!"
Melik yelled, and followed it with an impressive roar, drawing Simon's eyes back to him.
Melik fell onto his front legs and growled low and slow. The encircled lions spontaneously burst into a chorus of violent roars. Some of them raked their claws through the air, perhaps imitating their parents and the ceremony of initiation, and others kicked up clouds of dry yellow dust. Simon coughed. It wasn't a dream. He fell onto his front legs reluctantly and met Melik's gaze. Simon wasn't a fighter, but he knew the rules. Fights were constantly erupting in the schoolyard, although none so coordinated as the one he found himself in the middle of. It was the standard way in which lions decided things and proved themselves. The fights weren't always physical. Sometimes they were just staring contests, but they could be gruesome. Simon remembered one in particular where the loser had lost an ear, not to his competitor, but to the crowd itself. He had tried to run away, and that was rule number one, show no fear. Melik stalked slowly around Simon, growling steadily as the crowd continued to roar. Simon followed Melik with his eyes and tried to recall what happened next. If Simon roared, that meant he accepted the challenge? Or was he supposed to step in a certain direction? He was really too tired to remember and hoped rule number one would be enough. Thankfully, it was an easy rule to follow. He wasn't afraid of Melik or that mob of lions. All he wanted was to talk to Arya. He knew exactly what he would say. Melik came within pouncing distance, and the crowd hushed. The morning birds and the rustlings of the wind became audible, and without warning, Simon felt the urge to smile. He knew that was a bad idea, but he felt strangely giddy. Arya's words from the shelter swept over him like a warm breeze. He had been treated differently his entire life, but that life, it seemed, was over. The urge to laugh was almost overwhelming. Something clicked inside Simon's mind, like a candle going out, and he knew beyond any doubt why he was standing in the center of that circle. He was huge and clumsy. He had no interest in fighting, and he looked like a monster. He was a freak. Enid Saad. The word suddenly didn't sound that bad. Melik roared again, baring his teeth and spitting in Simon's direction. Simon kept his eyes locked on him, but he couldn't help the thin smile that escaped his lips.
"Take him!"
someone in the crowd yelled, but Melik hesitated. Perhaps he sensed that tiny change come over Simon, or maybe he just began to fully appreciate the 80-pound advantage Simon had over him. But in that moment, pouncing seemed like a bad idea. Melik roared a third time. It sounded a little thin. Simon's eyes didn't waver. The soft din of the crowd was punctuated by a shout, then another, then it exploded into jeers and yells. Melik took a step back and felt a drop of sweat trickle down his cheek. Simon's smile widened slightly. Then, with a clamorous peal, a bell rang out over the courtyard, signaling the start of school. The crowd seemed confused for a second. The yelling died down, and a few punctual lions immediately started pushing their way out to get to class. Simon broke his gaze with Melik and quickly scanned the crowd for Arya. He found her, two rows back, standing with Reba, but she quickly ducked away. Simon stood up and strode past Melik without looking back. This caused more confusion among the crowd and drew a couple more shouts, but it didn't seem to bother Melik. He seemed to take it as a reminder that it was high time he cleaned his fur. He crouched and did so, as if the crowd wasn't there, as if nothing at all out of the ordinary had happened. The circle of excited lions milled about in place and then broke apart apathetically, with everyone headed towards the school buildings. Simon fought to catch up with Arya, but she disappeared into the crowd. He caught one more glimpse of her darting into one of the low buildings as the second bell rang to begin class. He stopped to consider what to do next, and before he knew it, the schoolyard was empty. Simon skipped classes, half hidden up in a tree. He had no interest going into the school buildings, where fights were also not uncommon. The tree suited him just fine, and he was content to wait. Unfortunately, it gave him plenty of time to think, and Simon didn't need any more of that. He needed to see Arya, needed to see her smile, and needed to hold her paw. He was going to tell her that he loved her. The strange giddiness he had felt in the middle of that mob had disappeared, and Simon was left with a cold, empty sensation in his stomach. His head hurt. Time dragged. When the end of school bell finally rang, Simon's legs were numb, and he knew every branch, aphid, and bird in that tree. The doors of Arya's building burst open, and she was one of the first out, surrounded by a pride of her friends. Reba and Jasmine were in the lead, with three other lionesses following Arya from behind. They were in a hurry, and the pride quickly scanned the schoolyard before ushering Arya forward. She was crying. Simon's stomach knotted into a tight ball, and he awkwardly tumbled out of the tree, his legs disobeying even basic commands.
"Arya!"
he called out, getting to his feet and limping after her. The pride of lionesses noticed Simon, and they immediately fell onto their front legs and crowded in around their friend. Their keen eyes turned dull and disinterested. Their pace turned to a languorous crawl.
"Arya!"
Simon called again and tried to get close. The lionesses growled and blocked his way.
"Back off,"
one snarled, and another barked,
"Initzat,"
in his face. Jasmine turned around, and the look in her eyes made Simon shiver. He could only catch glimpses of Arya. Her head was down. She didn't look at him. The rest of school began to fill the yard, and more than a couple lions bumped into Simon. He was about to force his way to Arya when a strong paw pushed him back roughly. It was Malik. Simon stumbled clumsily, and a few other lions laughed. He drew himself up, thinking another fight was about to begin, but Malik just sneered and glided past Simon to join Arya's guards. Simon didn't go straight home. After the schoolyard emptied, he sat for a long time under his tree, hoping that perhaps Arya would break away from her battalion and come talk to him. Every 10 minutes or so, he'd pep up, absolutely certain there had been some misunderstanding and that Arya was about to turn a corner and come bounding towards him. Then a voice inside him would callously say, "No," and his stomach would lurch, and he would be utterly alone again, ugly and stupid, hopeless. Finally, without thinking much about it, Simon started on his way home, taking the long route along his father's wall. Simon liked walking that way, with the structure towering above him. It made him feel small. Sometimes he would find graffiti on the wall's surface and scrub it off himself, using his paws, his fur, and spit. The graffiti was always harmless nonsense, but he took pride in his father's accomplishment, and he didn't want to see it marred. That evening he found a scratchy chalk mark that read, "Wall I never." It made Simon smile, which he appreciated, but he wet his paw to rub it off anyways. He got as far as "I never," when a rock careened off the wall close to his head. Simon spun around to find four lions stalking slowly towards him. Malik was in the lead, with three other lions darting back and forth behind him, jumping up and down off boulders and tree branches. Malik's eyes were locked firmly on Simon, and he was carrying a large stone in his paw.
"I just want to talk to Arya,"
Simon called out, but he knew instinctively that these lions had no interest in talking.
"Malik, please."
"His name is Rox now, Initzad,"
one of the other lions called, and Malik sneered. Simon dropped his gaze, preparing for what was to come.
"And my name is Simon," he said.
He heard the four lions roar, sensed them charge, and felt the first hard blow cross his face. Everything turned a blur, and then to darkness. Simon woke with the moon high above him. It shone down brightly, with the rest of the sky somehow made darker by its light. There were no stars. Simon felt nothing, and it took him a moment to realize that he was sitting up and unconsciously cleaning himself with his tongue. His fur was matted with blood and dirt, which should have tasted salty and rough, but Simon tasted nothing. After a while, he stood up and noticed, without emotion, that his body felt different. His legs weren't working the way they were supposed to, and it hurt to breathe.
"Makes sense,"
he said to himself, but didn't give it any more thought than that. He limped slowly home. The village streets were empty, although Simon noticed candles burning in a few of the small rickety shacks. It was quiet. The only sounds were Simon's feet on the hard-packed dirt and the chirp of a few lonely crickets in the distance. But even those passed through Simon's ears without registering. His mind felt hollow. Simon's house looked small and old to his eyes. He imagined the air inside smelling stale, and the thought of cramming into his bedroom made his whole body ache. Simon limped on, past the house, towards the edge of the savannah. He heard his parents breathing steadily through their window.
"Is that your mother? She's pretty."
Arya's words from their first walk together bounced through Simon's head. He cringed and cradled his chest with his arms. One of his ribs felt broken. He kept walking, letting the words and pain evaporate into the night. The savanna smelled fresh, like it was brand new. Simon closed his eyes and let the yellow glow of the moon pierce his eyelids. When he opened them again, the horizon to the east seemed different. Simon numbly puzzled. Was it a smell? Or was he hearing something? Whatever it was, the horizon, which had always appeared limitless and bleak, seemed warm and inviting. You could lose yourself out there, he thought. You could be small, a speck with no more significance than a blade of grass. Simon smiled. Bracing himself, he took a haltingly deep breath and tried to stretch. His left leg wouldn't straighten properly at first, but then something popped back into place and Simon gasped. He looked back towards the village to see if anyone heard him, but there was no one there. He chuckled, shaking his leg out and paced back and forth to test it. It felt pretty good. In fact, it felt great. And without thinking, Simon started to run. The cold wind tore at his eyes and sent tears streaming down his face. He stumbled a couple times, but all Simon felt was the night air, the moon on his back, and the grasses whipping against his legs. He marveled. What if we could just let go? What if we could let the voices and complaints inside us disappear, and we became one with the world around us? He felt drunk with a sense of revelation and was surprised when he looked back and saw that the village had sunk below the horizon. Simon tripped again, but caught himself and laughed. Faster, he thought. The savanna swam out in front of him, towards the horizon and infinite possibility. Simon woke up, drenched with sweat and groggy. His eyes were blurry, and something about the way the sun shone through his window annoyed him. It's too bright, he thought. He couldn't see anything, and it was too hot in his room. He groaned and tried to drift back into his dream. There was his grandfather, young and strong, and he was chasing a bird. Simon watched from above. The bird's song was beautiful, and his grandfather was amazing. Faster than any lion, his pappy was running across the savanna and jumping, huge leaps that only felt natural because it was a dream, chasing that beautiful bird. Clenching his eyes against the too bright sun, Simon struggled to go back into that fantasy world, but he couldn't. What time was it? Why hadn't he closed the blinds before going to bed? The dream was still there, on the edge of his consciousness, waiting for him, if only it were darker in his bedroom. Simon sat up, resolved to close the blinds and go back to bed. He shielded the sun from his eyes and stopped. There weren't any blinds, and there was no bed. Simon was sitting on the ground, caked in dirt, surrounded by tall curtains of savanna grass, with the noonday sun beating down on his head. What was going on? Reality felt thin. Simon tried to stand up, but fell back onto the ground. His legs were quivering and weak. He looked at them, as if they would have an explanation for him, but they just shook lightly, as if exhausted. A stiff wind swept through the grass. Simon massaged his head in his paws. Every muscle felt like it was on fire. He tried to remember the previous evening, but his memory was strangely muddy. He recalled running through the savanna like a mad lion, but then he had turned around and gone home. Hadn't he? Apparently not. Simon struggled up onto his knees and recalled having drunkenly wished to become one with the world and to forget himself completely. Had that actually happened? A woozy sense of accomplishment zipped through him as he got to his feet, but it quickly vanished when Simon looked up. His legs shook. The horizon had changed again, not in an ethereal way like the night before. Standing there, plain and imposing, was a series of tall, rocky cliffs, and behind those, mountains. Simon staggered backwards. He had never seen anything so huge. He wanted to shout, to scream, but all he could manage was a weak, "What the?" as he teetered away from those impossible peaks. "This isn't happening," he muttered, turning around. He wanted to get away from them, to run away, but all he could manage was a stilted hobble. There was a single tree in the distance, at the top of a short grassy ridge, and Simon made for it. He needed shade. As he tripped along, he realized he also needed water. His mouth was parched, but the sensation actually helped give him a small sense of perspective. "Basic needs first," he shouted crazily to the sky, wagging a determined finger. He dimly noticed a persistent rumbling sound in the air, but ignored it. Whatever it was, he would deal with it and the situation behind him after getting something to drink. The hill leading up to the lonely tree was difficult. Simon's legs felt like he had run 1,000 miles. He collapsed at the base of the tree and immediately started digging. The rumbling sound had grown louder, and a small piece of him registered that it was coming from the other side of the ridge, but Simon stayed focused on finding water. A couple feet down, he uncovered a clump of roots and sliced them free using his claws. Simon sucked and chewed the moisture out of the pulpy wood and instantly felt better. He spit the spent roots on the ground aggressively and dug for more. After a few rounds of this, Simon's thirst wasn't fully quenched, but he was coming back to himself, and he knew he had to stop, lest he kill the tree. Simon looked behind him. He half expected the mountains to be gone, perhaps having returned to their hideout in the lands of delusion, but he was disappointed. They stood there as solidly as ever, with the first jagged foothills only a quarter mile away. Simon let loose a string of whispery curses. He was in big trouble. Batting away his pile of chewed-up wood, Simon staggered to his feet. The rumbling sound was starting to bother him. If he was going to be bizarrely stuck out in the middle of nowhere, he at least wanted peace and quiet. He imagined there being a congress of giant lizards on the other side of the ridge, conversing in the language of thunder and rolling rocks. He would ask them to please keep their voices down. Simon stopped. Imagination and fantasy were not going to help. He needed to stay practical. There was an explanation for his situation, and he was going to find it. Then he was going to get home. Simon continued walking. He saw that the ridge dropped off dramatically at its peak and resolved to remain as rational as possible, no matter what lay on the other side. The rumble grew louder with every step, and Simon began to sweat. "Stay calm," he whispered to himself, but he sensed what was coming. Simon crested the ridge and looked over the edge. He choked, instinctively digging his claws into the ground. The rumbling sound burst into a thunderous roar and rolled over him as a wave of nausea and vertigo. The world began to spin. At the bottom of the drop-off was a mighty river, a churning confusion of water, rocks, and sound. Dark blue surges snaked past Simon's eyes, exploding over boulders into fine mists and roiling around them in turbulent whirlpools. He shuddered. It was like looking down into a violent thunderstorm, and Simon instantly felt like he was falling. His legs buckled, and he barely caught himself before tumbling down into the water. He fell onto his knees and tried to breathe, tried to stay in control. He bit his lip hard. The shock of pain helped, but above the rapids, Simon imagined he heard the sound of distant, stuttering laughter. Eyes darting, Simon slowly crept back towards reality. The river had cut its way into the earth over time, but the ravine wasn't actually that deep. It felt like a mile, but Simon forced himself to recognize that it was only about 10 feet, not a deadly fall. He had never seen water move so quickly. Simon shook his head and gazed across the river. It was only about 60 feet wide, with grasslands on the other side, nothing like the abyss of the southern river. He sniffed, and for a brief instant his nausea disappeared, giving way to a sense of happiness and comfort. The smell reminded him of home. It didn't make sense at first, but then Simon had it. The river below him was the southern river. His nose wouldn't lie to him, and that meant he could follow it home. A fleeting image of Arya, smiling and warm, flashed through his mind, and Simon's vertigo and nausea returned. He edged away, reaching behind himself without looking. But how was it possible? The southern river Simon knew was calm and almost a mile wide. Where was he? How far had he run? He looked to the sun, which had peaked and was slowly descending to the northwest. The sight of it made Simon trip. His paw landed on a loose piece of thin slate, and he slipped backwards, falling onto his shoulders and somersaulting down the ridge. His aching body screamed out in pain as he tumbled awkwardly past the single lonely tree, but Simon's mind was numb with thought. He came to a skidding halt in the tall grass, eyes wide with revelation. It wasn't possible. It simply wasn't possible. He quickly rolled up onto his knees and paws and looked back at the slowly sinking sun. Northwest. The direction of his father's wall. If he followed the southern river, it would eventually take him there. That was good, but Simon grimly realized it wouldn't be enough. His legs began to shake again. He was on the wrong side of the river. That time, Simon was sure of himself. It wasn't his imagination. Echoing over the sound of the water was the sound of a distant, stuttering laughter.